Did you know the FBI believes there are as many as 25 serial killers active at any given time? However, the Murder Accountability Project believes that number to be closer to 2,000. Welcome. I'm Jay.
I'm T.
We are Fatal Blend.
This is where we talk about two things we absolutely love. A little bit of coffee and a lot of true crime. Specifically, serial killers.
All right, so let's get into it. What are we drinking today?
Do you want to go first?
I can. Okay. It's just a simple drip coffee through our Keurig with some French vanilla. Wanted to be pretty basic this morning.
Do you have a favorite French vanilla creamer that you prefer? Because he uses French vanilla.
The creamer. One I buy from Costco.
Oh, okay. I think it's
Can't
Coffee
remember
Mate.
The brand. I think it is Coffee Mate.
I think it's Coffee Mate. But okay. Myself, I am, again, I normally drink iced coffees, but it is the early, not morning, but like morning, afternoon-ish. So I'm actually drinking a hot cup of coffee, but I just do monk fruit. So I do some coffee with monk fruit and a little bit of half and half. Very simple.
Interesting.
Eventually, I'll probably like never have anything in it because I'm getting to that point where it's too sweet. So
I still like my French vanilla until they make a French vanilla coffee.
They
that
do.
It comes out tasting.
I was just gonna say they do, but you know those coffees where it's like, oh, you will brew them and they smell so good, and then you drink them and they just taste like coffee. There's literally no difference in the taste, in my opinion. Okay, so let me tell you a little story before we get into this. So our son is in college. He is doing a pretty much, well, according to the school, 100% online program. To receive his AA degree, and then he'll move on for a bachelor's degree. And so he's in his spring term and he just started it. And lo and behold, he was emailed the night, like on Wednesday night, that he had to be at class in person at night on Thursday. Our son does not handle change very well. So he was really upset about it. You know, to be the supportive parents that we are, we were like, listen, hey, we'll like go hang out around your school. We'll bring you there, because also his car, to be fair, he had no seats in his car at the time. We just did a whole like thing about his car. So we offered to drive him. And then we were like, we'll just kill some time. We found a place that we had dinner that we have actually talked about in the future. Like Thursdays just might be our new date nights, because it was really delicious. It's like a bar and grill, but it has like a family section and then it has a bar section. Their food was really good. But we found it by like a happy, not surprise, a happy accident, because we actually wanted to go to Buffalo Wild Wings. Side note, I don't actually eat meat, but Buffalo Wild Wings apparently has a bean burger, a black bean burger. And when we went in there, they told us it was going to be over an hour wait. And we're thinking they must have been just like short-staffed, because there was a lot of tables open. So we didn't complain. We were just like, okay, cool. And so we left. And then it was like, by the time we figured out where we were going to eat, we were afraid that we were going to like miss, not have enough time to eat or whatever. So we ended up happily finding this place. And it was really delicious.
And they have one of the best type of bar foods that you can have, which is tater tots.
They do. And the tater tots were bomb. I mean,
amazing.
They were really good. So that's kind of what we've talked about, is maybe on Thursdays, like we normally do a date night once a week anyways. We thought about Thursdays. Typically it's Mondays, but like we're going to miss our Monday date night this week because I'm going on vacation and Jay is staying home and he's working.
That I am. And then the following week, we will also not have a date night because she will be coming home and I will be leaving for work.
Yeah. Jay works full time. and then does this podcast on the side, and he travels a lot for work. So I, on the other hand, don't necessarily have a job. We used to own a coffee bar. That was my job, but we don't do that anymore. Hence the reason why we talk about coffee a lot, because that is that literally is something that I'm very passionate about. And now I focus on this. And then I have we have a little woodworking business that we do with our son. And yeah, that's just kind of how we do things. So
busy life. We like to keep moving.
We like to keep it moving. I mean, we have two kids, but they're adults. So, you know, it's like I was a stay-at-home mom for a long time. And so for me, it's become, if I don't have something to do, I drive myself crazy. So I'm just like picking up all these things. But the podcast is something I've wanted to do for a long time. I just never actually had time to sit down and research and record and do all the things that I finally do. So that is where it's at.
All right. So speaking of podcasts, who are we talking about today?
Okay. Today we're going to be talking about Peter London. I don't know. He's a little creepy. I guess they're all creepy, so I don't even know. Okay. Let's just start. Peter London, he is also known as Bjarne Skjernborg. He has a total of four victims. He killed in 1991 and in 2000. His method of murder was a broken neck and strangulation. And then the characteristics of his murders was parricide, which if you don't know what that is, parricide is when you deliberately kill your own mother or father, and dismemberment. Let's get into his background. There's actually not a lot to say about his background. He's one of those serial killers that's really interesting to me because he doesn't have this like crazy in-depth background of like abuse or anything like that. So he was born February 15th, 1972 in Denmark to Ole and Anna. He moved to the United States at the age of 9 with both of his parents. They originally settled down in Florida where his family ran a motel for a few years. And then in 1984, when he was 14 years old, they moved to Maggie Valley, North Carolina. And honestly, he had a very normal childhood. He went to school. He just had a normal childhood. His mom and dad were in his life. They took care of him. I believe he is an only child because there's nothing about him having siblings. So after a few years of living in North Carolina, his parents decided to separate. I don't think they officially got a divorce. They just chose to separate. And his dad, Ole, took Peter with him. So first, he went to Los Angeles and he was trying to make a career for himself there. It did not work out. So he decided New York was the best place. So he went to New York, lived there for a few months, wanted to actually live in Boston, but could never make it there because he couldn't find the work that he needed. Then he finally landed in Miami, Florida. So him and his father lived in Miami. And then after a few years of living in Miami, his dad was a bricklayer. His parents decided to reconcile and they went to North Carolina, grabbed Anna, the mom. And honestly, most likely because she's from Denmark, it's probably Anna if I'm being serious, but because I just can't figure it out. That's what I say. So they reconciled and they brought her back to Florida. And so that was it. They lived in Florida. In school, he went to school and he would work some odd jobs. And then he ended up becoming a bricklayer like his dad. And actually, he worked with his dad. During that time, he started to dabble in things like cocaine and the Mary Jane. And they ended up moving back to North Carolina because things were not working out in Florida. So they moved back to the same place, Maggie Valley, North Carolina. And when he was there, he went to school and he decided to sell marijuana to all of his classmates that wanted some. So he kind of like just honestly, okay, cocaine is a little bit of a stretch because I feel like at his age of like 15, 16, cocaine's a little bit of a hardcore drug for teenagers to be using. But marijuana, especially in what would this be? I mean, this would be like the 80s, early 80s. Nope. It would be, well, yeah, it would be like the mid 80s.
Yeah, mid to late 80s.
That doesn't seem all that terrible. I mean, I know when I was in high school, we had people that sold drugs at our school and we had people that partook in the drugs at the school and nobody really cared. It was just marijuana. That's, you know, whatever. So it's kind of in my mind, kind of like a typical high school teenage thing. Again, he had a relatively normal childhood, but it did come out a little bit later that Peter and his father would actually regularly abuse his mom together. And alcohol seemed to play a big factor. They would both drink heavily and then beat the shit out of the mom. And so while he had a relatively normal, it's not as normal as one would think, but there's nothing like he was not actually abused by any accounts, but he was an abuser to his mom.
Yeah. And that's, you know, on the facade, it looks like this is a normal childhood, but if you're abusing your mother behind closed doors, definitely especially not a normal upbringing.
Well, and especially with your dad, like,
right.
Anyways. So during that time, though, neighbors had called the police multiple times because they would hear the fighting and the screaming, and never once did the cops show up. That's just food for thought. Okay, let's move on to his actual first murder. So in 1991, he was 19 years old. He was sitting with his mom and he got into an argument with her because he had really long hair, like,
yeah, you see the pictures of him. It's definitely that 80s, you know, past the shoulder, halfway down the chest type of long hair.
He had a man bun before man buns became popular. Mm-hmm. So she said, "You need to cut your hair, son. Like, you just need to cut it." And he said, "I don't want to cut my hair." And she was like, "But you need to because, you know, it's kind of scraggly." Whatever. She said whatever. And he said no. So he strangled her to death over a haircut.
Yeah.
So his father comes home from work and his wife is dead. The son is there. And his father says, "Well, shit, boy, let me help you hide the body." So they bury her. They bring her to a beach in or near Cape Hatteras. And they buried her it was like on a beach that was near this main beach. And her remains were found 8 months later. There were some people who were walking down the beach. They were walking along the shore and they came across something that was wrapped up in a blue blanket. So they kind of like took a little peek and it ended up being a body that was wrapped in a blue blanket, then wrapped in black plastic.
See, I never understand if you're going to do a murder, however you want to say that. If you're going to commit murder and you're going to bury the body. I hear this a lot where people find this shallow grave. Like,
for real.
I mean, I get it. People probably aren't thinking at the time, but I'm over here going, I'd bury that thing, you know, 12 feet deep so nobody would find it. Like, it just.
Or not, you know, bury it at all.
Yeah, or just not do the crime. I mean, that's really.
I mean, if it was you. But, if it was you and you came home and I had been killed because our boy here didn't want to cut his hair, which, by the way, is something that we argue about. Absolutely. In our house, because he likes his hair a certain way. And I know he is almost 21 years old, but his hair just drives me nuts. I mean, Jay's hair drives me nuts, too. So I'm very vocal about how I think they need to cut their hair. So what would you, seriously, you'd come in and be like, "All right, son, let's go bury the body." Like,
I mean, he is bigger than me. So I'd be like, let's figure something out. And in the meantime, I'd call the cops. But I'm just thinking, like, you know, for all these people that commit these crimes out there in the world and they get caught because it's, you know, there's a leg sticking out of the ground, or, you know, because it's in a 2-foot grave. Yeah, I get it. Digging in dirt's hard, but like,
that's why they just bury people 6 feet under.
Yeah, it just blows my mind. It's just crazy.
It's a little weird. I agree. Every time I hear of somebody finding a body, all I can think of is like, you couldn't have done better. Like, you were asking to be caught. That's all there is to it. So they find this thing. It's wrapped in a blue blanket, black plastic, tape, and yellow rope. Both So once they identify who this person is, they realize that there's a very good chance that at least the father could be involved. So they start searching for him, and they're not home, obviously. They do end up finding them actually in Canada, in a motel in Toronto, Canada. And they actually arrested both Peter and Ole. And I'm sorry, I know his name is not, I don't know how you pronounce it. I listened to the pronunciation so many times, and I keep messing up how to say it. So sorry. So July 1993, Peter received 15 years in prison for killing his mother. He was sentenced to, or he was put in the Brown Creek Correctional Institution in Polkton, North Carolina. His father received 2 years for being an accomplice after the fact, because according to both of them, his dad was not there. His dad just helped, again, hide the body.
Get rid of the evidence.
Yeah.
Bury his wife.
Which, well, I mean, I guess if he abused her, maybe he didn't like her so much. I don't know. I don't get it. He actually, so Peter ended up doing a Danish interview while he was in prison. And he showed up to the interview with half of his face painted black. And when he was asked why, he said, because one half of his face was white, the other half was black. He didn't paint it white, but he is white. So he had white and black. And he said it was to represent the good and the evil. And this interview actually drew a lot of attention in Denmark, drew a lot of attention to people. People started to kind of like, I don't know, I think women had like an infatuation with him. And there was a professor that saw his interview. His name was Professor Sten Levander. He's a Swedish psychologist. And he had they have a checklist. They actually have a psychopathy checklist that is 40 traits, I think, of a psychopath. And he deemed that London had 39 out of the 40.
Ooh, almost a perfect score.
So you know right there that he's not of, I wouldn't say sound mind, but you know that, like, as far as his, I don't know what you would call it, his brain doesn't work like everybody else's brain. So in 1999, so again, he was sentenced to 15 years in 1993. In 1999, the prison, the Brown Creek Correctional Institution in North Carolina, was overloaded. So they released him and deported him back to Denmark. And when they did this, they actually took him with four officers to put him on the plane and send him back. So he gets to Denmark. He was married. He got married in 1996 while in prison. So there was a woman that he had met through prison, and they got married. And she lived in Denmark. So yeah, so they ended up getting.
Must have saw the interview, and
that's what I'm saying.
Sent letters.
I'm saying women were infatuated with him. So he moves in with her, obviously, when he gets back to Denmark. And then he moved back in with him. So in 1999, so they had been married for 3 years at that point, but they had never actually been around each other. So he moves in with her and her daughter, and they get into an argument, and he beats the fuck out of her. And so she kicks him out, and she's like, get out.
Some things never change.
So while he's out, he ends up staying in a halfway house kind of in Denmark. And he ends up going to a brothel that's in Copenhagen. And while he's there, he meets this woman named Marianne Peterson. She's 36 years old. She has two boys, Dennis and Brian, and they become lovers. Because again, he's not divorced, but his wife wants nothing to do with him. And so they become lovers, and he moves in with them, kind of moves in with them. He still has his place, like the place, like his apartment, but basically he's living with them. July 3rd in 2000. So again, let's just break this down one more time. He was released in 1999. I don't know what date, but he was released in 1999. And by July 3rd of 2000, he is with Marianne and her family and off and on living in her house. So not very long. Peterson and her boys were both reported missing July 3rd, 2000. And they were actually declared missing by a stepson of hers who had found a note on the front door. Because the research I saw did say that Marianne Peterson was actually a widow, I guess. So that's where the stepson comes into play. And the thing about the note, the stepson said, it just was oddly worded. And he was like, it was, he walked up to the door and it basically was a note that said, hey, we are on vacation. And he said, but it was the way that it was worded. It was the words that were actually used. He was like, this doesn't seem right. So he goes into the home and he finds that the home is like trashed. And he's like, there's garbage everywhere. There's furniture that has moved all the furniture is away from the walls where they normally would be. There's vomit in all of the toilets in the house. And there's a weird smell coming from the basement. So he calls the police because he's like, this is not right. So police show up. They decide that they're going to talk. They kind of look around. Okay, they go into the house, search the house. They don't really find anything.
Except for it being ransacked and vomit in every toilet.
Yes, and they do find traces of blood, like in the basement. Her car was still there. That was the other thing. Her car was still there. So they looked in her car, found some blood in her car. So they go and talk to London. And he's like, oh, no, they said they were going on vacation, her and the boys. I stayed behind because I offered to paint her house for her. And they were like, that's weird.
Weird.
So they go back to her house.
The paint fumes made him vomit in each one of the toilets. Okay.
I'm thinking, if I'm being honest, the vomit must have come from him after he killed
probably
him.
Drinking.
I have no idea. They never do address why there was vomit in the toilet. So they go back to her house, start searching some more. They find more traces of blood in the cellar. They look in her bed. They find traces of blood in her bed. But again, it's all traces. There's not like a big pile of blood anywhere. They did find some in between tiles. And they did find that they found traces of blood on the chopping block in the kitchen and in the blender in the kitchen.
Oof.
And again, they're traces of blood and they don't necessarily know it. Even I don't think if it's human blood, they just know it's blood because of how they're doing their investigation. Needless to say, Peter was arrested on July 5th of 2000. So she was reported missing the 3rd. He was arrested 2 days later. He was charged with the murder of Marianne and her two boys. They actually think that the first victim that he killed was dismembered in the basement. And then he dismembered the other two in the garage of the house. And the reason they believe that is because they found in the garage there was an angle grinder. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that is?
Yep.
Okay, because I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a little handheld with a disc on it that spins at an extremely high rate and you can grind down metal with it.
Okay, so they found that in the garage that was had blood on it. And then they also found in the garage that there were over 100 marks in the floor that came from an axe.
Well, so using an axe and an angle grinder to dismember.
I guess. So that's what they charge him with. But then 3 weeks later, because he keeps saying like, I didn't do anything. Like, no, they're on vacation. I'm supposed to be painting their house. I don't know what happened. So 3 weeks later, he changes his story.
Oh, interesting.
And he says, okay, listen, Marianne killed her boys. I found her unconscious on the floor when I came home. Her boys were dead. She was unconscious from using drugs. And I was really pissed off because she just killed her boys and here she has passed out. So I hit her as hard as I could over her head and killed her. And then I dismembered the bodies. And I didn't tell you guys because you guys know my background and you wouldn't believe that I was doing it at like almost in self-defense for those boys.
I've killed before, so you wouldn't believe that I did it in defense this time.
Yeah.
All right.
So they're like, all right, cool, cool. And then in October of 2000, so a few months later, he changes his story again. And he says, okay, listen, I killed him. I killed all three of them. I killed Marianne because she was talking on the phone very sweetly to another man, and I was pissed. So I killed her. Then I went and I killed her sons. I broke all three of their necks and I dismembered their bodies so that I couldn't get caught. According to him, he took some of the body, the big body parts, like however he dismembered them.
Like probably torso.
Yeah, I'm thinking like the torso. Yeah. And he put them in a bulk waste container that was outside of the home that apparently in Denmark, they take these big, I guess, containers and they go and they incinerate them. So he put the bodies, the big parts of the bodies in that. because then it was taken that next day, actually, to be incinerated. So burned. And then he drove around. Well, this part, they don't know. They believe that he drove around and placed all the smaller body parts in other people's trash cans. All over Denmark, or wherever he lived, Denmark. So because they believe that, they actually went through about 10,000 tons of garbage to try to find their body parts. And they have never recovered any of their body parts ever. So they were never able to find them, which also is crazy because normally, you know, you don't normally see them being, it's harder to prove murder when you don't know where the bodies are.
Well, and that's heartbreaking for the families. You've got nothing.
No closure.
You've got nothing to go back to.
Right. And actually, what did they, I read a thing and I forgot to write it down, but they did, one of his cellmates had said that he was talking about this murder. And he had said that the reason he dismembered and got rid of the bodies was because at the time in Denmark, the death penalty was, so he thought, was in, still like legal. And he thought they will not be able to convict me without bodies, so I won't have the death penalty. That's where his brain was. Which I guess would have, according to lawyers from Denmark, it would have been true. They have to have a body to have any sort of death penalty thing.
Right.
But again,
so
like
life,
I was just going to say
death penalty because he doesn't want to die.
Right. Because he's a
just
coward.
People. Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that. I'll explain why I shouldn't have said that as we go. Okay. So his sentencing at the end of 2001, he was found guilty of all three murders. He was sentenced to life in prison. It took the jury 10 minutes to unanimously find him guilty. His trial took just 10 days. And he had the option to appeal, and he never did. So he just took the punishment.
Because he admitted it.
So here are some few here's a boatload of facts about him. The detective, Niels Kohler, described both Marianne's home and Peter's home as reminiscent to a slaughterhouse because they actually looked at both. They searched both homes. So he was saying that. So they kept saying they found traces of blood. But in my mind, if you found traces, you would not have described that as a slaughterhouse.
Right.
So I feel like there's a little more that they didn't.
Maybe just the way it was set up, like areas that can be dismemberment, you know, but.
Yep.
Yeah. If you're claiming slaughterhouse, you're not talking about a clean couple of droplets here and there.
Right. Right. Also, his father was arrested for theft because Marianne's personal belongings were found in his home.
So again,
he obviously knew.
Dad was helping.
And I'm assuming his dad helped him get rid of the body parts. He was given 4 months in prison. And the reason why is because his father was older. And they gave him, there's two kinds of imprisonment, I guess, in Denmark. And they gave him the worser of the two, but only for 4 months. Again. Hmm. But I still feel like it's totally whatever. London was married, has been married 3 times while he was incarcerated. So his first one was when he was in prison the first time after killing his mom. And he was married from 1996 to 1999. And then he was married again September 28th, 2008. And he only stayed married for 11 days because the lady that he married, knowing that he was the person he was, decided, I can't be married to him because he is talking to another girl. And he told me that he is just friends with her, but it's really his girlfriend. So I'm not going to be married to him. Not because he's a murderer, not because he's a serial killer, not because he's a terrible, awful person, but because, damn it, you had a girlfriend while in jail.
That is wrong.
Yeah.
At the highest level.
Yeah, that's the most important part.
Unbelievable.
Then he had this girlfriend for quite some time, and they actually married May 26th of 2011, and they were married until October 3rd of 2017, which is a very long time, I feel like, to be married to somebody like him.
Yeah.
Here is why I said I shouldn't have called him a coward. Because he has filed multiple lawsuits against people. So his first lawsuit was against a journalist for making a statement, and the statement he made was, "We are basically not clinical psychopaths in the Peter London category." He was not talking about Peter London. He was talking about something about psychopaths. And he was saying, because Peter London scored a 39 out of 40 on the psychopath scale, that they're not that psychotic. And he said, excuse me, how dare you defame my name? So he sued them for defamation of character. He lost because the judge was like, listen, he didn't really say anything that wasn't necessarily true. It's been, you know, it's been put out there that you are a psychopath. He then again decided to sue the leader of the Danish People's Party because during a TV program, London, so Peter London, she was saying something about Peter London and she said that he was callous. She said that, or actually she compared him. She said something about him being callous. Okay. So he sued her. He wanted 100,000 kroner, I think is how you pronounce their money, which is the equivalent to $14,530, like US dollars. So he sued her for defamation of character because she called him callous. He also lost that one too. And he does continue to, like, anytime somebody says something bad about him, he will try to sue them. So then again, if he ever hears this podcast, he might try to sue me. So he also changed his name from Peter London to Bjarne Skounberg. And actually just recently, I think he put in a different name change too. But I couldn't verify that, so I didn't want to bring that into it. Also, the Danish people are very upset with the Danish police because they're not understanding why it was that he was released from prison, sent to Denmark, and then had the freedom to just live his life. And they said, knowing what he had done, knowing that he didn't serve his full sentence, they should have at least been watching him and just like trying to like keep track of where he was, because this would have never happened. Well, so they think. I mean, so that is the story of Peter London.
Interesting story. Definitely some faults on the law enforcement side for sure. Letting a murderer not serve his full sentence.
Yep.
And then, you know, listening to the Denmark people and how they're feeling, I can understand that. I would probably feel the same way, especially if, you know, the outcome was what it was. I'd be looking at them as well. But, you know, it's always hindsight's 20/20 after the fact.
It's true. I do have some final thoughts on Peter. I'm sorry. I guess I should call him by his what the name is he goes by now. So Bjarne, I'll just again. Okay. He is the epitome of a psychopath. He has zero emotions. The fact that he's able to kill people, not care. When he's questioned, he very simply is just like, not me. Also, his dad is, in my mind, just as bad as he is, because even though his dad didn't do the killing or any murdering, so they say, how can you help cover up a bot? Like, I guess, like, if you're right or die.
We understand being parents, like, you want to be there for your kids as much as you can, but at a certain point, there's a limit.
Right. Also, there was a petition that went around Denmark. It did, unfortunately, it did not happen, but I kind of think it's pretty badass. There was a group that petitioned the courts because there is no death penalty in Denmark, but they petitioned the courts to have a special circumstance to allow the death penalty just for Peter Bjarne London.
Yeah, I mean, when it's that extent,
because you know he's
that gruesome to get rid of bodies in its entirety, the family has nothing to go back to hold on to, except for memories. There's no burial plots with a body in it. There's no cremation and ashes. There's none of that. There's nothing.
Well, and the other thing is, I don't actually know. Like, I know in the United States, certain states, their life sentences is like 20 years, 25 years. I don't know what Denmark's is, but I did read a thing that he had said that he is just excited for when he gets out to live his life. So I think there's
this
actually
guy should
a chance.
Never get out.
Yeah, I think there's still a chance that he might actually get out of jail, which I'm sitting here thinking, life in prison should be life in prison, not 25 years or whatever. So, but I don't know. I don't know Denmark's rules. I should have looked to see what that means, but I don't know. He might actually someday get out of prison, which is scary. That's a scary thought for me, because I don't live in Denmark, but that's scary. Yeah. Oh, that was right. Because he said, I can't wait to get out and live my life because I have plans to move back to the United States. So that was the thing. If he gets out,
let's hope we don't let him.
I know. So if he gets out in Denmark, there's a chance he's coming back here and he's going to do it again. He is a psychopath. He has zero emotion, zero empathy. And he cannot, it doesn't matter. He will just, whatever, get drunk and kill you, I guess. So I don't want to say anything too bad about him because I don't want to be sued for defamation of character. So all I'm going to say is, you suck, sir. That's it. That's it. You suck. That's my personal opinion.
Personal opinion
you
there.
You can't sue me for saying that you completely suck.
All right. And with that, that is Peter London. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us on our podcast again. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. We look forward to bringing more of this information to everybody out there and just, you know, have some fun doing it. Again, thank you for all the participation and listening. Next week, we're going to dig into Gerald Parker. So look forward to learning about him and talking about some of the stuff that he's done. So with that, I will say enjoy your day and hope to see you guys soon.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.